My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break and stay retro. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I'm Darren Hupke, and this week we've got returning guest. You may recognize him from his book, Good Game, No Rematch, and his previous appearance on this show, but Mike Drucker, welcome back to the show, Mike.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me back. I said, hey, everybody, and it's just you, but I'm talking to everybody. Hi, everybody.
Hey, everybody. It's Dr.
Hi,
Nick.
Hi, everybody. Yeah. Yeah, I went full Dr. Nick on that. Yeah.
Is Dr. Nick, you know, some Simpsons characters have died. Is Dr. Nick dead in the show?
That's a weird question. I actually don't know. That's a great question. I do not know.
I mean, I watched a ton of Simpsons, like every child of the 80s and whatnot probably did. But my oldest daughter, she's 12. She's watched every episode, like even like up to like whatever the current episode is, like multiple times. And so she's probably way more of a sponge here. But I can't call her up at school right now to ask and confirm if Dr. Nick is dead. Her teachers may be upset about that. But I will ask after school or Google it. But, you know, still, for some reason, it's one of those characters I feel like I heard or remembered hearing something about him not being alive anymore in the show. Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
All right. Well, welcome back, Mike. We talked about it on your first episode you were on, which we had just recorded prior to this one, but people won't hear this one until weeks later. But you have your book, Good Game, No Rematch. You've got your comedy shows that you do in New York. What else can we ask you to learn about you? Let's see. What was the last game you rolled credits on? You were hooked enough and obsessed enough to actually see it through to the end and see the credits.
I would honestly say, I mean, I recently went through another Baldur's Gate 3 playthrough, but that doesn't really count as rolling credits on something new. I would say the last thing I rolled credits on, I think the last thing I rolled credits on was Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Ooh.
That, I think, is like the last game that I just like played all the way straight through.
Yeah, I need to play that still. I've been really good about pacing myself. In a younger years, I would just buy the game that like, oh, I want to play this game. I'm going to buy this. I'll just keep it on my shelf and I'll have this backlog of like just reminding me of how much money I spent full price on these games. And by the time I get around to actually playing them, they're likely on sale or available much cheaper. But now I'm like, I'm in a space where like I will play a game. I will allow myself to juggle two or three depending on like genre or scale or scope of the games. But I will make sure I'm like, I can fully commit to it and like tell myself like, if I'm actually done with this game, I'm not going to return. Like, okay, now you can make that next purchase or try something new. So Clair Obscur is one that's like, it's like that next purchase. Like as soon as I finish something, that's likely going to be that game I want to buy. But then I also have, I still haven't gotten a chance to play that Metaphor Re Fantasio by, I'm a huge RPG nerd. So like, it's not easy to like that be the game I play because it could take me, you know, with my pace and everything, it could take me 2-3 months to finish it. And then if I immediately jump into another RPG, it's like, well, I played 3 games this year. Like I'm a gamer. I did it, you know, instead of playing some smaller games, I could have, you know, banged out like, you know, double digits of games potentially, but, I'm wired weird, so I've not allowed myself to do it.
No, I hear that. I hear that. And I enjoyed it. It's also, I would say it's one of those games where I'm like, I love this game. I don't know if I'm going to ever play it again. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, whereas like something like I'm sure, I don't know if there's a controversial take or not, but I liked Metaphor a lot more than I liked Expedition 33. I liked Expedition 33. It kind of made me feel the way Final Fantasy X did, where I was like, I really like this. I don't know if I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate everything about it, and I appreciate why people love it. I just, I think the last third of it didn't quite click with me the way the first two thirds did.
Gotcha. That happened to me with Tales of Arise, or whatever that last Tales game was. I was even on social media, like every hour, like posting something about how, oh, this might be the best RPG ever. This game is so amazing. I love this thing. Everybody needs to go out and play this. But I got to the third act and like the game just fell apart for me. Like I lost interest. I like couldn't believe that things were kind of reset the way they were. Like the plot was just like, why are we doing this? And, I didn't force myself. I mean, I still enjoyed it. It was still good. But like that enthusiasm I had riding up to that point, it was then like I finished the game and it was like if somebody brought it up, I'd say like, yeah, it's good. You should check it out. But I wasn't any longer like singing its praises and broadcasting it for everyone to try just because of like this weird just turn it takes that just completely lost me. But yeah, overall, it's still a good game. Still, you know, worth playing probably for most fans, but just did not have that same love that I'm going to likely go back and replay it again.
Yeah, exactly.
The fun thing about Final Fantasy X, though, too, is they had that that language, you know, that other, like, was the Albed or I forget what it was. But
I forget what it's called, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you got those books that, like, unlocked that language as you played more and more. And so they wanted you to replay it so that then you could, like, understand what was being said, you know, from those characters. But, like, that is also a game that, like, cool, I finished it. Like, this was fun. This was not any of these PS1 Final Fantasies I played and loved. It was different.
Right,
and
exactly.
I'm fine with what this was this one time through.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, let's do some this or that's. Let's see how we go here. Remember that fictional, we will call it a laser gun this time to be maybe a little bit more appropriate. A laser gun, you know, metaphorically is at your head and you must choose this right. or that. Would you rather have a trash can turkey or an enemy heart?
Oh, I think trash can turkey, just because whenever you see those in a game, you are so relieved. So trash can turkey all the way.
And they're usually on plates and stuff as well, too, which is just really weird, like well presented.
Fully cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea of just collecting a heart an enemy drops, like, does that mean you're eating their heart? Like, I don't understand. How are you getting that power back?
Yeah, exactly.
Sonic or Knuckles?
I'm going to go with Sonic just because I think we got enough attitude. you know, Knuckles almost felt like Sega going, what if Sonic had even more tood? And I think we have enough tood. I like Sonic as he is. I like Knuckles. I'm glad he's part of the series. But I was never like, oh, man, I'm more of a Knuckles guy. I think Sonic's good the way he is. We don't need more attitude.
That's funny. And more Simpsons. Like, Knuckles is kind of like the Poochie, because when Sonic and Knuckles came out, you could, like, go back and play all the old games with him in it as if he was always there. But they clearly just made him for more attitude.
Oh, yeah. He like, breaks Sonic, too, when you play it with that Sonic and Knuckles. Like, it's so much easier when you can just fly and attach yourself to a wall.
Yeah, yeah. They clearly weren't anticipating that, but you know, it's a fun thing to do. I mean, I do like the idea that they gave you a little bit extra value for those games that maybe you thought you were done with. So smart,
definitely.
Smart deal for fans of the games. Action RPG or strategy RPG?
I would say strategy RPG overall. I tend to enjoy them a bit more. They tend to be a little more like epic to me. I like action RPGs and I'll play them, but I think I'm far more excited about a Final Fantasy Tactics remake than I would about, you know, a Diablo 1 remake or something. There's something about strategy RPGs that just feels almost like prestige television.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't want to make it sound like it's vegetables, but it almost sounds like this elevated form of the RPG where you're really thinking. And action RPGs feel a little more like the action movies of RPGs where you're cutting stuff down, which is cooler, but I feel like, I don't know. I almost feel like after I finished a strategy RPG, I just like finished a college class, which is very stupid to say.
That's fun. Mario Tennis or Mario Golf?
Mario Tennis. Much faster, easier to get, like, when you're a kid, to get other kids to play with you. I appreciate Mario Golf and Mario Tennis on the Game Boy Color because both are good role-playing games. But in terms of like any system, if you're just asking me to choose between the two, Mario Tennis.
Okay. Animal Crossing or Elden Ring?
Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing is weirdly meaner to you. You have to pay rent. You have to, like, you know, Elden Ring, these are all, like, mutated royalty who attached limbs to their body and shit. And, you know, you're kind of like, I get why you're mad. It's a little different when your landlord is like, hey, man, we really need that money from you, buddy. It's almost, like, more real life stressful. It's... Paying bills is more of a Souls-like than actually playing a Souls-like, so I have to go with Animal Crossing.
That's funny. And that's the sadness that those games can bring you. Like, you're escaping life to play these video games, and then if you just discover Animal Crossing, and you're like, wait a second, I have to do this here, too? No.
Yeah. Exactly.
Where was it? Oh, graphics or frame rate? For the technical tech heads out there.
You know, I'm going to say frame rate. I think even a few years ago would have said graphics, but I think recently, as I've played more of the Steam Deck and I've played more games on Switch, I would rather a game run smoothly than I can see every person's reflection in every puddle. Mm-hmm. I still like that. I still marvel at good graphics, and I still think good graphics are amazing. But if you asked me, I would rather play a PC game on medium or low settings if it runs much better than it does on high settings.
Mm-hmm.
Just, and not because it won't run on high settings, but just like, to me, I'd rather get like a smooth, nice, clear experience than I would necessarily just, I don't know, seeing graphical perfection.
Yeah. I have gone the 100% swing from like the graphics person to the frame rate person in my life. Like like the 360 and PS3 era, I convinced my wife that our tax return check, you know, like we were paycheck to paycheck, poor young adults and everything. But I convinced her that like the right thing to do was to buy like a 1080p plasma TV. I was like, no, this is like, it's going to make all the games look the best. Like, we need this. And like, so I was always like finding ways to make sure that the graphics could be the best and like the most powerful hardware and like everything they could to make sure the games looked great. But like, you know, that was an era where performance really suffered a lot with games and we just kind of overlooked it. And then now we have the options to balance those things. And like, you know, I played Final Fantasy VII, you know, Rebirth or whatever that last one was. And I don't even know that I even looked at the graphics modes for that. I was like, no, give me that 60 frames. Give me that buttery smooth, like experience. Like this game looks great. Like right now, without even looking at that other option, this game looks good on my TV. I'm enjoying what I'm seeing. This is a pleasing image. Like I'm happy with what's in front of my face. So yes, let me have that in addition to it feeling quick and fast and smooth. And now I just want the game to feel right. And odds are it's going to look good anyway. And sure, can I, like in Spider-Man, I have toggled on to see like the ray traced reflections and everything. But ultimately I want to, you know, be flying through that city there, you know, at that max frame rate if I can.
Yeah, no, 1000%. I feel the exact same way. Like, you know, I like enjoying the experience and everything, but I really want to, I don't know, I really want to feel like I'm participating as much as possible, and I get more distracted nowadays from, you know, frame rates that drop suddenly when there's like a lot of, you know, crowd people on screen or something. And, you know, I would say a frame rate drop will take me out of a game much more than a poor texture somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's do a couple more here. EGM or next gen? This is a magazine.
EGM.
Okay.
Yeah, EGM. I subscribed to EGM. My first thing I ever got published as a piece of writing was a letter to EGM when I was 13 years old.
So oh, that's
EGM
cool.
1000% all the way. Yeah.
Do you remember what issue that was?
I don't remember what issue that was, but it was a letter about the Dreamcast, and I was saying that going back to Sonic Attitude, I was like, I don't know if Sonic Adventure is going to be that good. You don't want things to go the way of Bubsy. It's a very 13-year-old in 1999 type letter. I don't stand by it. I disavow my 13-year-old self, but it was the first place I ever saw my name in print.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm digging through old EGMs. I mean, I dig through a lot of the old magazines, but for the books I write, the 32-bit library books, it's all about like PlayStation 1 games and everything. So I like to reference like, you know, what was the pulse on the game back in the era, you know, compared to what might the pulse be on the game now type of thing. So like I'm reading through a lot of those magazines right now because I'm working on a new one, and I'll look out for it and I'll see if I see it. But EGM is a go-to. I don't even know why I have that question, because like any normal and sane and healthy American knows that EGM was the magazine to be reading. Yes, if you had extra money to spend and you got another trip to the grocery store where you could buy another magazine, yeah, maybe you walk home with a next gen in that same month, but that primary purchase was always the EGM.
100%.
Well, I guess I was like you. I also had a subscription there, so you know, I would then maybe pick that official PlayStation magazine to try and snag a demo disc or next gen or whatever, but EGM was always right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Run and gun or beat 'em up?
That's a good question. I would say run and gun. I'm a little more of like I'm like a Metal Slug type person.
Mm.
Every year I have like one or two arcade joysticks, and every year I'll play through the entire series using an arcade joystick just to recreate that sort of Pizza Hut feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say run and gun.
Okay. Cool. Well, you survived the gauntlet. The laser gun looming, you did it. No stress.
Thank you very much.
Let's do the icebreaker, and then we'll get into that main topic. But I love this question. This is a two-part question. So I need you to set up the question so that I can then ask it. But just think of it doesn't have to be your number one favorite gaming franchise of all time, but just think of one that you'd consider like a top five. Tell me one of your top five gaming franchises.
Top my head Final Fantasy.
Okay. Now rename that franchise, and you cannot use any of the words already existing in its title.
That's such a hard question. Final Fantasy. Yeah. That's such a tough question.
Sakaguchi kind of did it on the Wii with The Last Story. He kind of like did it to himself already.
That's very true. I didn't even think about how on the nose last story was.
Yeah.
Good game. I just didn't think about how on the nose that title was. Yeah, like it's almost like I want to call it like Sid Chocobos and Crystals, like just the three C's. Like it's almost like CNC Music Factory.
CNC Gaming Factory.
Gaming Factory.
Yeah. That's fun. I mean, it's like there's no right or wrong answer. I once asked this question to somebody for Legend of Zelda, and they were like, The Adventures of Link. They just used the second game as the go-away.
Yeah, I would call it Zelda 64. No, that's fine. That's not really an answer.
Okay, do you want to try and think of one, or we'll go with the CNCNC?
I'm going to go with CNCNC because each entry is so different that it's very hard for me to like get like one through line that's not just like, you know, Worlds of Wonder. You know what I mean? Like it's hard for me to like do something that's specific enough that nails it.
Yeah. It's it's different every time. That's what made it kind of unique. But now that's what I call RPGs Volume 7 featuring.
Oh, that's a much better title. That's a much better title. I should have gone with that. That's so much better.
All right. Well, that's fun. The question for the week, the other question you had selected when I reached out to you about wanting to do, this is a fun one. I love doing this one. The other evergreen question I love asking is, what's an average or below average game you love that doesn't get enough attention? Like that gets answered a lot, but this one also is up there, and it's just cool because it's more of a personal story and you kind of get to, you know, it's not something that's like factual. It's just, you know, somebody's, you know, nostalgic and emotional ties to a plastic box that played video games. But what, what is your favorite gaming console of all time? And we'll talk about why.
And just to be clear, I don't think this is the best gaming console of all time, but it is my favorite.
Yes, that's the right way to answer it for sure. Yes.
I'm going to say Super Nintendo, and that's just because it came out at such an interesting time in my life. I was still a little kid, and you know, it was probably the first time that like new graphics really like blew my mind, which is something that both with as technology ages and we age is a little less of a thing. But I just remember like seeing that and being like, oh, this looks so much better. And my family was not in a great financial position at the time. So I remember I literally built, you know, a fake Super Nintendo out of cardboard just so I could pretend I had one, and made like fake controllers out of cardboard just so I could pretend I had it. And I made a scrapbook. I cut out, you know, like the weekly circulars where like Toys R Us and, you know, all these different stores would like, you know, have the games in them. You get in the newspaper. I made a scrapbook of all the games I wanted and the system. So when I finally got it some Christmas down the line, not only was it exciting because it was a new system and I hadn't, you know, had a new system yet in my entire life. We only had the Nintendo. It really felt like, you know, like, oh, we got this. This is something I didn't think I was going to get. This is something that I was so sure I wouldn't get that I, you know, had to imagine having it. And just like it introduced me to so many things. Like I didn't play role-playing games on the NES until after I played them on the Super NES, just because I didn't really understand them when I was a tiny kid. I didn't understand Dragon Warrior because I couldn't read. You know, but with Super Nintendo, I get introduced to Final Fantasy. I get introduced to,
I think Ogre Battle was, cause then Tactics Ogre would have been like that next kind of change over from it.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, it introduced me to so many different things and so many different genres. And, you know, the fact that with the Super Game Boy, I could play Game Boy games on it and they look better than before. And it really, as a little kid, having just played the NES and really old DOS games that my family could run on their crappy computer my dad bought for business, it really felt like the first time I was like, oh, this is evolving into something crazy. I mean, like the first time I saw Street Fighter 2 on the SNES, I was like, oh, it looks just like the arcade version. It's not like playing like old arcade games on the NES kind of didn't look as good. Like Donkey Kong on the NES doesn't quite look as good as Donkey Kong in the arcade. Mm-hmm. And with Super Nintendo, you're like, oh, I'm basically getting the arcade version here.
Yeah. That's cool. It sounds funny. I had like quite the similar like path and everything. I ended up going, my family ended up going with a Genesis instead of an SNES, but we had an NES, played it for years, a lot of exposure to genres that like I am just, you know, it missed over on the NES era, but once I got to that 16-bit phase, it was definitely like, oh, and like now this is all clicking for me. And that was, again, like I had an uncle who had the US Final Fantasy 2, so what was that, Final Fantasy 4?
Yeah.
And like I remember visiting his house and like wanting to play it, and he was like, no, you can't play that. You don't know what to do. Like, don't even start it up. Like, play something else. And like, I'm like, well, I'm not going to break the game. Like, even if I don't understand it, like, why does it matter to you? Like, let me just play this. And like, it was always this awkward, like, tension of just like, no, like, you know, and then just don't play the Super Nintendo. You can't play it then. You know, it was like, this is so weird. I'm not going to ruin your progress or anything here. I just want to like walk around this world and see what this is about. And so that like made me want to like play games like that as well. And so ultimately I would get into them, like not on the Genesis because there weren't as many great options. I finally was able to get Phantasy Star. Phantasy Star 3, I think, is the one that we had. And I remember my brother and I like found it at a swap meet one weekend when we were with the family. And we took it home. It had the box and instructions and everything. And we were like, oh, this is cool. And we played it for the weekend. And like on Monday, my brother comes up to me and is like, hey, this kid wants to borrow it. He's going to give us $20 to borrow it. And I was like, we just got it. Like, I don't want to loan it out. And he's like, he's going to give us $20. It's $10 each. Come on, let's just let him have it. And I was like, I guess fine. And so we lent it to this kid and he never returned it. Like, he was gone. Like, I think he may have even moved just a few months later, but like, it was just never discussed, like, why we never had that game back. And it was like another one of those tastes of RPGs that like was then taken from me.
Right.
And we had a DOS computer as well at home. Like, my mom used it for her job doing some type of financing thing or banking stuff. I have no idea, but we had just a computer that was in the garage that had a whole bunch of floppy disks next to it. And I would just pick out a random Harley Davidson Road to Sturgis game and start playing it, you know, when I was super bored. But yeah, that 16-bit era was like super magical. Like, looking back, are there some like all-timers? Obviously, I know there's some huge AAA ones, you know, that like, it got to be. But are there some all-timers that still hold weight for you on the Super Nintendo?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Link to the Past alone, walking out into the rainstorm in the beginning of the game still, you know, gives me goosebumps. Like, mm-hmm. It's still such a wonderful moment. And the first time I saw that was so mind-blowing. And again, even now it looks good. I think that's the other thing about the Super Nintendo is even now it still looks good to me as a system. You know, the games still look good. I can play Earthbound and not feel like, you know, I'm in some ancient era of gaming where nothing quite makes sense the way you can be with old NES games. I would say definitely Earthbound, you know, the games that everyone says Chrono Trigger. I actually like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. Mm-hmm. I think it does. I know you did a zine about it, but like, mm-hmm. I do think it deserved better than what it got. And that was a great introduction for me as like a 9 or 10 year old into role playing games.
Yeah.
So I really have fond memories of that. I love Super Ghouls and Ghosts. I know that it's not a fair game, but it has one of my favorite soundtracks on the Super Nintendo. You know, Super Castlevania 4. There's so much. NBA Jam, I'm not even a sports fan. And NBA Jam is probably the closest I've ever come to being absolutely obsessed with a sports game.
Yeah. Jam was so good. I had gotten that for Christmas one year. And we took the bus to school where I lived. And I remember one morning, you know, the whole point of that was to like play through and beat all the teams in the NBA, you know, and everything. And you sign in with your initials and you continue your progress or whatever. But I remember one morning, like the bus was coming and I was finishing like the last game against the last team I needed to beat to like have that done. And like the bus driver was like outside honking and my brother was like, come on, they're gonna leave. And I was like, hold on. And I literally held up the school bus because I just wanted to like run out the clock and ensure that like my progress was saved with beating that final team one morning in NBA Jam. I would go on to become an obsessive basketball fan, but at that time, you know, it wasn't necessarily, that was just a video game to me, but it was a fun one. I love the arcade. How about the design and the aesthetic of the SNES? You like that the purple and gray like design of it, the eject button and everything, or are you are a fan? Some people aren't, like they don't like the boxy shape of it or anything at all, but like it was unique.
I like the boxy shape of it. I know that a lot of people prefer the Super Famicom type look, but I don't know, maybe it's just nostalgia, but for me it just looks so futuristic too. It probably is nostalgia, but I definitely prefer that gray and purple design. Like, whenever I buy collector things, or, you know, sometimes you can buy like modded controllers or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I will lean more towards the purple and gray Super Nintendo aesthetic than I will sort of that rainbowy aesthetic of the Super Famicom.
Mm-hmm. I like that box of the Super Famicom, like the way it's got like the like outline with like the, all the four colors and all that stuff. And it's really neat looking box and everything, but I do prefer the more like muted and like, you know, I don't want to say it's mature or grown up, but, you know, it's got a more of a subtle look to its punch than just like in your face with like the four colors.
Yeah, totally.
And then, but again, I was, as the Genesis household, my best friend had a Super Nintendo, and so I was always wanting to go to his house and play his games, because he had Legend of Zelda, you know, he had Final Fight, he had all the things I wanted to play. At my house, we had, like, Greatest Heavyweights, this, like, obscure boxing game, like, Chakan the Forever Man, like, stuff that, like, I still have a nostalgia for, but, like, no way right. are they pound for pound, like, the SNES equivalents, like, that I had access to, which yeah. is, yeah, oh, such a bummer. But, the Genesis design, though, that Mark One version of it, it had, like, that headphone jack on it and, like, a volume slider.
I remember, yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Loved it.
It was like a, like, you know, hey, this is like a piece of high end like audio equipment or audio visual equipment for your, like, you know, your setup next to your, you know, your record player or your stereo or whatever you have in your household. Like, they thought of that design, which I always thought was kind of neat. You know, I never actually plugged it into like an external audio source or headphones or anything, or needed to use that volume slider, but it was just neat to have that on there. I thought the Genesis did the SNES having that eject button was another like version of that. It was like, is this necessary? I just normally yank them out, but like I can press this button to properly like release the game. Like, oh, okay, this is cool.
Yeah. I mean, what's crazy is I remember being a little kid and one of my friends had a Super Nintendo before I did. And one of the big features that he talked about, and we were under 10 years old, keep this in mind, was like, he was like, the games just work, man. You don't have to blow into it. You don't have to blow into it. It works on the first try. Every game works on the first try. Or if you pull it off the shelf, it just works. And I was like, oh my God, no more blowing into the game to try to get it to work. Like, even that alone was a cool new concept.
That's fun. Cool. Any final thoughts then on the SNES? Because we've reached the point where we did it. We've completed the episode. We answered the question.
No, I mean, I'm always going to love it. And, you know, I know that some people get annoyed that how Nintendo re-releases games and things, but I'm so glad that the Switch Online thing has so many games in it. And I mean, I have honestly put probably more time into Mario Paint on Switch Online using the Switch 2 Joy-Con as a mouse than I have into some of the games I've specifically bought for the Switch 2.
That's funny. Yeah, I just picked up a Switch 2, and when I was looking at that, I've played it, like, I have a little Miu Mini, like, emulation handheld thing, and I've played a lot of the Picross games, like, from SNES on there, but I saw they actually have the Japanese, you know, Picross SNES game on the Switch Online, and I was like, I played this game about a year or two ago, but you know what, like, I'm going to play this again. Having this accessible, like, this is just cool. Like, on this giant screen, you know, like the colors pop in here. Like, I'm going to play this game and probably enjoy this more than whatever else is in front of me right now at this moment.
Yeah, and apparently they've upgraded the CRT filter on it, so it's a little more, like, it has a slightly more rounded edges, so it looks a little more accurate.
Hmm. I like that they have options for that. Yeah, I don't mind. Like, I get some people having fatigue of, like, re-releases or people, you know, putting out the same thing every generation or over and over again. Like, I don't mind companies doing that. Like, if it doesn't mean they're not making other new games, like, then I don't see the problem with it. Now, if they were focusing all their time, effort, energy doing that instead of making newer games, like, yeah, that'd be a problem. But, like, let people have their cake and eat it, too. You know, if you don't want to play it, don't play it. But if it's not hurting anything,
exactly.
Like, let it be there. So for those of us who want to dabble in it, can go back and have a good time.
100%. I totally agree.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. I will have like links to your social media and all that stuff in the show notes below. Go out and pick up his book, Good Game No Rematch, whether in physical or audiobook format. It's a huge recommendation from me. Again, find those links in the show notes below. But thank you so much for joining the show. Hopefully we can have you again in the future if you'd ever like to come back. Always got a lot of questions to ask. So thanks.
Thank you. This was super fun.
All right. Have a good one, everyone. Bye.
Hello. We are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.